First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Jacksonville's effort at police reform falls apart when one council member walks away. Governor DeSantis says he can save Christmas, but supply chain experts in Jacksonville say not so fast. And a top lawyer at City Hall accused of misconduct. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Listen right now on the radio, and you can watch the live stream. Yes, we are live on video. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, and later on demand at PBS Jax Passport. All of the news of the week ahead, and then later in the hour, we will take a listen through the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. It's this month's DJ listening sessions over at JME, our Jacksonville Music Experience. Keep listening for that. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy week in the news, they always are in Florida, we welcome regular contributor Charles Griggs. Charles, good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. Here in studio with me, Raymond Troncoso, reporter at WJCT News. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And Claire Goforth, writer and freelance journalist extraordinaire. Hi, Claire. And in just a few moments, we will connect with Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union to round out our fabulous foursome. Okay, lots to talk about this week. We'll go to your calls in a moment. You can join us here on the Friday Roundtable right now. It's 549-2937. And we do have Nate Monroe. Hi, Nate. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, let's begin with our top story. Safer Together, a group meant to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the Jacksonville community, has met an unceremonious end. City Council President Sam Newby terminated the city's police reform task force abruptly on Wednesday, shocking the committee chair, Councilwoman Joyce Morgan, and community activists. They vowed to protest next week outside city council chambers. Now, the group's vice chair, Councilman Michael Boylan, resigned from this whole effort on Monday because he said community activists were unwilling to back down from their demands for a civilian review board to look at use of force incidents by police. Boylan disagrees with that proposal, although he said he did support a board that would review JSO policies. Boylan explained his decision on this program yesterday.
Well, first of all, we have to appreciate the fact that this conversation has been going on for nearly a year. We had 14 hours of very difficult conversations, which I was actively participating in. Subsequent to the report, another 4 hours. So it's not that I'm walking away from this after a very short stint.
However, Safer Together Chair, Councilmember Joyce Morgan of Arlington, also appeared yesterday. She told the show she feels this effort needs to continue because difficult conversations are part of the process. Here's Morgan.
We had a lot of citizens who were passionate. We had people come on both sides of the aisle. But in the end, I just believe that we forgot something that was major. We forgot that it was always going to be contentious. We forgot that people were going to have tough conversations. We were going to have to grow thick skin to get through this.
It's our top story on the Friday Roundtable. Give us a call, everyone out there in the 904. What do you think about the collapse of police reform in the city? 549-2937. Call us up now. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page always open. Charles Griggs, let's begin with you. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, Melissa, I'm sure that many people listened to the entire interview with Councilman Boylan yesterday, and many people also respect Councilman Boylan for his tact and manner of engagement. He's expressed that during his interview during his time on city council, and he talked about how much he's worked in the community outside of council before he was elected. He's been someone who's been willing to listen to all sides. Even to the point where I sat in a recent council meeting and many of the same people who have been critical of him, of his process and of JSO, also still praised him about his willingness to listen. Unfortunately, this one action has caused some people to challenge his character and his intent behind this process. You know, life is hard. And for most of us, the work we do while we're here on this earth is hard as well. And for a community that's always looking for ways to join the League of Extraordinary Cities, we are still very divided and looking for someone to step up and be courageous. And this just doesn't look right when you have a council member who is willing to step back in the middle of this process, even though they have a report that was issued with recommendations. That's not enough. I think Councilwoman Morgan hit it on the head when she said that, you know, we have to be willing to hang in there and do the tough work. And it's unfortunate that Councilmember Boylan decided to step back at this point in time when the work is really just beginning. The report did nothing but make recommendations. And I think we all know how divided this community is. And it was a good thing to have people from both sides really sort of working together, even though they had hard lines from their perspectives. But at the same time, to have a council member who's looking to turn, you know, step away from this process during the middle of it, it just reeks of how this community addresses most of its problems when it become hard, and they have to address those concerns of people who are within the community.
549-2937. Of course, the issue of police reform is one that has embroiled cities across the country. The Black Lives Matter movement, which we've seen expressed here locally via a coalition of groups, is calling for more oversight over police-involved shootings of civilians, particularly those of color. They've called for changes like a civilian review board of incidents that turn deadly in particular. They've called for more mental health staff to be added to JSO, implicit bias training. That's a big discussion point. Nate Munro, these are all recommendations that Safer Together has made. They're unlikely now to be implemented because this whole committee is over now.
Unceremoniously. So what I remain stuck on with this entire episode is that Michael Boylan's explanation for stepping away included a reference to the October 15th meeting a week ago. And he said this yesterday on your radio program. He characterized that meeting as volatile. That is a misrepresentation of what happened at that meeting. It was not volatile. And I appreciated that you pressed him on this, that, you know, the accounts from that meeting were that it wasn't volatile. He tried to sort of chalk that up to that's somebody's opinion. It's really not an opinion. You know, we're not debating shades of gray here. It just volatile is a word that has a definition, and that meeting was calm, orderly, pretty dry for the most part. And so there's a problem here, which is that what he's saying doesn't actually add up. And it's why people assume that he must have gotten some sort of political pressure or some other sort of unserious or problematic reason for stepping away. I mean, what he's saying just is wrong. So, you know, I kind of remain stuck on that point.
For the record, Councilman Boylan, who we do credit with appearing on this program yesterday and taking quite a few critical calls from listeners, he denies that he is being pressured by JSO or the police union to pull the plug on this effort. Okay, Claire Goforth, Michael Boylan said that they had hit a brick wall because the activist groups are insistent that we need a civilian review board to look at use of force incidents by JSO, particularly those that result in the deaths of unarmed civilians. Those, of course, are the most controversial incidents all over the country, which have sparked the Black Lives Matter movement. Boylan is not in favor of that. Of course, the police aren't in favor of it. The activist groups say they'll keep pressing on this. Some municipalities have instituted civilian review boards in other parts of the country, and some data was presented, it's my understanding, throughout this process to explain how they work. And so that's really at the heart of this whole matter, whether the police can be successfully pressured to open up their kimono a little bit to allow oversight of their, the way they police, particularly communities of color, to allow anything but internal oversight, internal affairs to look at it.
Yes, and that's been the issue all along. People do not trust JSO. They feel as though it is not transparent. It doesn't have accountability to the community.
We're having trouble hearing you, Claire. You might want, yeah, we're having a lot of trouble hearing you.
Is that any better?
Not much. While we work on that, let's go to Raymond Troncoso. As Claire was saying, the issue is one of building trust between police and the community. That's a problem here. That's frankly a problem everywhere. And let's give JSO credit for body cameras. They've agreed to those. They have Shadco meetings. These are community meetings with different neighborhoods where they try to build trust with members of the community. They will point to those types of things as an example of good faith. That certainly has not satisfied activists in this city, Raymond, who are calling for more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the process of the Safer Together workshop, even by, you know, Newby's own admission and earlier memos, was that it was always supposed to be a two-pronged process. The first year of it was supposed to be sort of like a fact-finding mission where they had all these meetings where they're going to make recommendations. And then the second half of it, which was supposed to run through June of next year, 2022, was supposed to be what's called action steps, how to actually make those recommendations actionable in a way that benefited both the community and JSO. Now that Safer Together is dead, there is no action steps that are being, they basically got two meetings into it. There was two meetings already scheduled, one for November and one for December, that now are never going to happen. So it's hard for, I think, the community to say, yeah, they're really taking a serious look at implementing reform and gaining our trust when they just killed the one thing that, you know, was supposed to get us there.
Let's go back to Claire Goforth. Groups like Jacksonville Community Action, the Northside Coalition of Jacks, they vow to rally. They're going to rally Tuesday night outside city council to try to keep this issue alive. Claire Goforth, we have you back now. Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, as I was saying, this has been the issue with JSO for years, that there's a sense that they aren't accountable to the community and that they lack transparency when there's an officer-involved incident or a complaint, which is why the activist community and many around town have been advocating for a citizens review board and just more oversight. By unilaterally just canceling the work of the committee, Council President Sam Newby is sending a message to the activists and people who have rallied for change that their concerns are irrelevant. I think that City Council, by doing this, they have, some of the members, they have forgotten just a year and a half ago, we had thousands of people in the streets in Jacksonville. I was there. I covered the protests. And these people were very passionate, and they were very clear about their demands. And they were working together as a, many different organizations, which we've seen even since this decision came down. They have been engaging in good faith throughout this process. And for Sam Newby to just say, well, you know, this is getting hard, so we're done now, that sends them a message that it's time for them to do as they're saying they're going to do now, which is to put the pressure back on. You know, these citizens review boards, they've been in cities around the country for many years. I haven't heard any substantial reporting about issues that the JSO and people who are against them have complained about, that they've become overly politicized, that officers who do right get punished by them. All they effectively do is give the public a sense of transparency and trust in police. And if we have greater transparency and trust, I think that many would agree that would actually make JSO's job easier. Because when you go into a community that doesn't trust you, they're a lot less likely to engage with you when they have reason to believe a crime has been committed or that a crime will be committed.
549-2937, what are your thoughts about police reform efforts in Jacksonville? Give us a call. Tom on the west side. Hi, Tom. The west side is the best side, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Good morning.
I just wanted to say that with a third of the city budget annually going to the sheriff's office, the citizens deserve a say in how things are run down there. A citizen review board, considering the troubling history of the JSO, is probably the least step that can help in reforming this agency that really needs a lot of help. It may need even more than that.
Thanks, Tom. Charles Griggs, you know, Joyce Morgan, the council member from Arlington and the chair of this, she said she had already scheduled meetings to continue Safer Together in November and December. Council President Sam Newby says the work is over. He said that because so many important concerns had been raised, he felt the work was productive. But that said, you know, this is like so many other efforts at reform in Jacksonville around all manner of issues. Basically, it's a lot of talk and no action. Here's an email from Bill. Any council member can introduce legislation around police reform. How many have, how many will? We did ask council member Michael Boylan about that when he appeared on the show yesterday, and he said he hadn't thought of that, but that he would look at that. I mean, what's the point of doing Safer Together and issuing recommendations if it doesn't lead to legislation? What's the point?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that was an interesting comment that Councilmember Boylan made was that that he was looking at potentially a policy review committee, and he said that both sides weren't in favor of that, so he felt like that was a step towards common ground. And I do recall you asking him, was he going to submit that as legislation, and he hadn't really thought about it. Well, that's one step forward, you know, perhaps taking some type of action. But also, Melissa, last night I had the pleasure of moderating a panel discussion by the Collective Voice Partners with, they had Melissa Nelson, State Attorney Melissa Nelson on, and the discussion, we were having a discussion about the police review boards. And, you know, one of her comments was, listen, you know, hey, it doesn't take, legislation to stand up a police review board or committee. The citizens can do that. They can come up with their own conclusions. Everything is public record, and then submit that information to their elected officials for some type of policy change. That may be true. And also, State Senator Audrey Gibson made the same point as well. So there are avenues to do the work. However, without any teeth to it, without anything that is going to, put a police or put JSO or put law enforcement in a position where they have to review their actions more closely, give more scrutiny to those actions on behalf of the public, then those opportunities go nowhere. And I think that one of the things we may see is some of these community organizations try to stand up their own efforts at citizens review and try to, you know, and look a little more closely at some of the reports that are coming out of the state attorney's office for action. So hopefully that will be a way forward, but I don't see this work stopping here. The work is not done. If anything, these actions have probably fired a lot of people up and have given them the impetus to put some more power behind the work that needs to be done with or without council members. And those council members who figure this work is too hard may find themselves on the sideline in the future.
Samir in Fernandina Beach. Go ahead, Samir.
Hey, good morning. So calling from Fernandina, but I have a unique perspective to offer. I was the ACLU organizer for North Florida for a few years, and that led me to get connected with JSO. Based upon what was going on in 2017, I suggested that they do a community policing program at the academy, which they agreed to pilot. 4 years later, it's going strong. We get great reviews from the cadets, and JSO keeps asking us to come back. Mm-hmm. I also helped start up the Nassau Racial Equality Coalition. So just want to put in context, my comment is that if there's a opportunity for both sides to try to land on what are we trying to solve for and then be open to a basket of solutions, that would be my suggestion for the way forward.
Thanks, Samir. Thanks for that. 549-2937, Jay in Mandarin. Hi, Jay.
How are you?
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to say, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head, and I think the majority of the problem is a lot of talk and rhetoric, but there's never any action. And it really doesn't take an entire room full of councilmen and a few of JSO in a room to figure this out. That's not what it takes. And if we've been having a conversation for 12 months and you've been having a problem for over a decade, nobody wants to hear what can and can't be done in 12 months and thick skin, and people need to try to talk and talk. You don't need to talk anymore. You need to do something, because there's a distrust in the community, and the divisions aren't just because of certain things. These are the divisions that are becoming openly racial, and that's not a road to go down. But we're in the Southeast United States, but there needs to be a change. And all this talk, it is clear and evident that JSO doesn't want to change. Their councilmen, in my opinion, and this is just opinion, I'm sorry, why would I want to pressure anybody to change if it's not going to benefit me? If they leaned on someone that quick and shut down a conversation that fast, the conversation didn't mean anything to begin with. It was rhetoric and it was a joke to begin with. Nobody took it seriously.
Thank you, Jay.
So this needs to stay.
I hear you, Jay. Nate Monroe, it's a fact of life in this city and most others that anyone running for office has a huge advantage if they have the endorsement of the police and fire unions. That's a factor.
Without a doubt, it's a factor, and particularly here. Charles brought up, and I want to make sure people understand this. One of the difficulties with JSO, and I think this actually came out in some of these meetings, you know, if citizens want to stand up their own citizen review board, if that's the response from the state attorney and from some of the politicians, the problem with that is getting records from JSO can be very complicated. It can be very expensive. The committee, the council committee's own consultant that, like, taxpayers were paying for, had difficulty getting just basic demographic information about JSO's workforce. JSO told her she'd have to file a records request. Now, she says she found a different way to get that information, but, I mean, that by itself is like a huge insult to the council. I mean, that's how JSO treats people who are trying to get information out of them. Their sort of line item budget is kind of a black box. There are aspects of it that they claim are privileged from public disclosure because of, like, national security reasons. They have contracts for, like, facial recognition software that can be difficult to get. There is a lot about JSO that I think could be reformed, and it's definitely not something that they're open to talking about. And it's an enormous roadblock if the solution is supposed to be that citizens can just do this work on their own. I think that's almost absurd, really.
5492937. Here's an email from Mark at Mayport Naval Station. Attempts at police reform are hitting roadblocks everywhere. Police unions and qualified immunity laws are written in blood and stone, and internal affairs investigations are sometimes token at best. Outside eyes are essential to process improvement. Claire Goforth, let's first acknowledge that police have a very dangerous, difficult job. Qualified immunity exists for a reason. Police are shielded from prosecution if civilians die in the line of duty because of the overriding sense that the larger good is protecting the community. Now, where that runs into trouble, and has particularly in recent years, has been since the introduction of the iPhone. And citizens have been able to record video of incidents where police are shooting civilians, often unarmed, often not doing something that would warrant them being shot and killed. And so when people have been able to see with their own eyes what sometimes happens in these flashpoint interactions, that has been the game changer. That has, more than anything, given momentum to calls for police reform. And so, you know, we've hit a rock against a hard place in Jacksonville, with activists saying they won't back down on their calls for more oversight, and the power structure in Jacksonville refusing to give that any more play.
Yes. I mean, I would say that it is pretty distressing and sad that it took iPhone cameras and Android cameras for us to believe what many of our federal citizens have been saying for decades in this country, that the police often are using force in situations when it's not warranted. And I do recognize, just as you say, it is a very dangerous job. I speak as someone who has a close family member who is a police officer, not in Jacksonville, but I respect the work that they do. I know that the vast majority of police go to work every single day trying to do their best to protect the community, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be accountable to the community. You know, we see in Jacksonville that our power structure and our leaders are so terrified of the police and losing that tasty endorsement that they will essentially kowtow to whatever JSO demands. I mean, I looked at the city budget recently, and in decades past, JSO was getting roughly 15% of the city budget, and this year it's getting more than a third. And yet we still have these complaints about it. I mean, we still have a very high murder rate. We still have issues with crime. So clearly just dumping more money into police isn't going to fix the issue of crime. What the activist community wants is for the city to take a more progressive and innovative look at how we can have a safer community for everyone. And that includes by having more transparency. I mean, if you take a look right now at the transparency page on JSO's website, where they post body-worn camera footage of police shootings, you're only going to see a handful available. And you're not going to see any officers' names, and you're not going to see their faces either. That's because JSO is using Marcy's Law as an excuse to redact that information. And in fact, after they had made one of the most, the biggest strides towards the reforms the activists have been asking for, which is posting body-worn camera footage of shootings very quickly, several months later, JSO just unilaterally took them all down and said, well, now under Marcy's Law, they have to be redacted. Most of those videos have yet to be put back up on the website. So for State Attorney Nelson to suggest that citizens can just do their own citizens review board, it does come across as a bit, maybe not disingenuous, but it's just not quite accurate because you need the information in order to review the shooting. And if you don't have the footage, then how can you review it?
Mm. Raymond Troncoso, you know, we'll follow this into next week because, of course, as Charles said, this issue isn't going away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I want to touch on something that the other guests spoke about, which is transparency and the budget, right? This is the largest JSO budget ever. It's over $500 million. It's over a third of the city's budget. And yet JSO charges thousands of dollars to get police shootings that State Attorney Melissa Nelson earlier this year said would be released within 30 days of every shooting. That was a promise that she made, and JSO has never fulfilled that ever. Last month, WJCT News partner Jax Tributary did a whole story on this. They asked for 18 shootings, police shootings, from 2018 through 2020. JSO wanted to charge them $5,000 for those shootings. And then even for the ones that had already been previously cleared, as Claire said, they took those down. So there's not really a lot of transparency when it comes to police use of force incidents, despite promises that have been made by Sheriff Mike Williams and the state attorney.
If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, where we talk about the biggest stories of the week with Raymond Troncoso of WJCT, Charles Griggs and Claire Goforth, regular contributors, and Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union, live on the radio, live video on Facebook and YouTube, and your calls, 549-2937. Lee on Facebook says, we need greater transparency. Many communities have this as a major foundation, even when those in powerful positions resist reform. Mike emails the show, if Council President Newby wants to end the committee, he needs to tell us what Council will do to review and implement the recommendations. Here's a tweet from a listener. Your panel is being too kind and isn't reflecting the anger and fear in the community. Well, you know what? We do acknowledge the anger and fear in the community. We are simply trying to have as fair and objective a discussion of this as we can. So we welcome your calls, tweets, and emails. 549-2937. Join us. Let's talk about some other headlines from the week. Speaking of the City Council, a committee there this week approved Acting General Counsel Jason Teal's nomination to officially take over as the city's top lawyer, but there was fiery debate over allegations of misconduct. Teal has been accused by Rules Committee Chair Brenda Priestley Jackson, who represents District 10, of improperly giving a raise to a subordinate with whom he is in a relationship. Teal also signed off on a payment to a law firm that hired his predecessor. His predecessor was on the nominating committee that selected Teal for the job. And so this is kind of inside baseball stuff, Charles Griggs, down at City Hall. But that said, it does feed into a narrative that that the city government is corrupt, that there is an active good old boy network, that more transparency and oversight is needed into these kinds of decisions. Of course, there is still an active federal grand jury looking into the failed attempt to privatize JEA, and on and on and on. Your thoughts?
Great. Yeah, so the pushback on this was that these actions, these activities occurred several years ago, didn't have anything to do with his current position. And so, you know, attorneys operate in an environment where they're all, you know, working out of the same pool. So, yeah, you can see some of where there may be some, you know, some crossover with, you know, how people get to know each other and working in working environments and so forth. However, that doesn't mean that this couldn't use a little extra scrutiny. And, you know, with all these things being said, you know, the public has, as long as the public has the opportunity to weigh in and understand all of the facts and give it the proper vetting, then, you know, you can, you know, I don't want to give them a pass on it, but at the same time, we're so used to this type of activity going on in our community. Jacksonville is such a, it's not unique, but we thrive on this type of drama. From time to time, we keep hearing these type of things go on in our community. But yet, we still want to be the type of community that other, you know, when we visit, do these chamber trips and so forth, we want to be like other community, other cities, right? We want to have thriving downtowns and you know, tourist destinations and all these things. But we can't seem to get our act together internally. And this is just another thing, one of those incidents that cries for more public scrutiny.
Yeah, we need to note Jason Teal did tell the committee he believes all his actions have been above board. He was approved by the Rules Committee. Nate Monroe, you write about this a lot in your column. The way these kinds of questionable maneuvers have been normalized in Jacksonville and really in Florida, too.
Yeah, I mean,
people just take it with a blasé sort of, oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like scandals really have to have some sort of, some really extra component to make them almost even newsworthy.
I
do think the part of what I think the Teal controversy reflects is some dissatisfaction with the way that the Office of General Counsel is set up. We have a very odd system in Jacksonville. The General Counsel is an enormously powerful position and taken to its extreme, which it has been taken to its extreme a few times. That position can overrule elected officials. It can really sort of do whatever the General Counsel thinks it can do. And Brenda Priestley Jackson served on the school board and came into this process believing that OGC needs probably to have some changes, in its structure and what it can do. And I think that's, to me, the kind of bigger picture story. I think that the Office of General Counsel probably needs somebody needs to take a good look at how to reform that office, how to make the constitutional offices and the members of the city council and the school board all feel like they've actually got representation and that this isn't just a lawyer working for the mayor's office. I mean, there's been an undercurrent of that for many, many years now.
Let's go to our lawyer on the panel, Claire Goforth. We saw this conflict when the school board was fighting City Hall over whether to levy a half-cent sales tax.
Yes, the infamous shall can mean may debate, I believe.
Right.
Not debate, so much the unilateral ruling that the Office of General Counsel made at the time. Yeah, and Nate's exactly right. There have long been complaints that the Office of General Counsel is not independent enough from the mayor's office. Those complaints got so serious that, in fact, the Charter Review Commission debated them. And I was reading through their report last night, and one of the things they suggested, although they weren't willing to recommend it, was that in lieu of having the one, you know, final decision maker, OGC, to have each agency have their own counsel in the Office of General Counsel. So City Council would have one, the school board would have one, the mayor's office would have one. So there would be a little bit more of this sense of separation. You know, the issues with Mr. Teal, I think that a lot of people have feelings about it, but overall, I mean, dating someone within your office is not unheard of, and people getting raises is also not unheard of. It really doesn't speak to that incident itself. It speaks to this, like, frustration that people have with the sense that the Office of General Counsel works for the mayor first and then everybody else second.
Raymond Troncoso, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the frustration that has been spoken by people on the committee who voted against Teal's nomination, who were overruled, such as Rene DeFore and Chair Jackson, was that there wasn't a real selection process. There wasn't an open selection process. Teal is kind of the anointed pick of Mayor Curry. He was selected by Curry's chief administrative officer, Brian Hughes, and pretty much handpicked as a successor by the outgoing general counsel, Jason Gabriel, who all kind of put him up. Even before he was actually appointed by Curry on August 7th, he was already acting as the interim general counsel in July before he was even officially appointed, something that DeFore brought up in the committee and saying, how is this legal? You know, no one else can make you a general counsel besides the mayor. And yet here you were a month earlier acting and signing official documents as acting attorney, as acting general counsel. So there's just a lot of parts with the process that other people in the city have problems with, because it seems like it's just the mayor's chosen pick and not the consolidated government's lawyer, but more just representing the mayor's office interests.
Thanks for that. Okay.
Melissa, Charles.
Yeah.
I wanted to add, as someone who served on the Charter Revision Commission, and I'm glad that Claire brought that up. One of the other recommendations that did not gain any traction was to have a representative from each of the agencies who the Office of General Counsel represents to nominate someone, and then they select or make a recommendation to the mayor's office, and that person. Also, that person who serves in the office would be in a staggered office. So you wouldn't come in at the same time as the mayor. The mayor would have to wait for 2 years before he was able to, before the Office of General Counsel would take office. So there was a way for to try to build some more independence in that, but it never got any legs during those commission meetings.
Thanks for that, Charles. One other big story from the week. Earlier this week, Governor Ron DeSantis visited Jaxport saying he believes Florida could solve the nation's supply chain crisis. The governor essentially saying, let's save Christmas by convincing cargo companies they can avoid shipping delays at other ports by rerouting their containers to Jaxport. More than a million containers moved through Jaxport over the last fiscal year. But all of this said, we spoke with the University of Florida Supply Chain Management Center. They say rerouting ships to Jacksonville would just push delays down the line to trucking companies and eventually to consumers. Nate Monroe, we still don't have the capacity to bring in what are called Panamax-ready ships. They are dredging the shipping channel down to 47 feet to allow that. But a lot of these ships coming in on the West Coast would not necessarily come to Jacksonville. So was the governor being a bit disingenuous in saying he could save Christmas?
I mean, I'll give him maybe a little bit of slack here. This is just the kind of BS bluster that, like, any public official would probably engage in. I mean, the Jaxport, even with the deeper 47 feet of water, would not be able to take in the biggest post-Panamax ships, many of which call on these super deep water West Coast ports. I mean, this is just nonsense. All of this is just spin and trying to get some easy headlines. There's not a lot of substance here.
Hmm. Claire, go forth. Your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Nate. It's just that normal political stump speech, essentially. It's just another example of how our governor is basically using his office to run for re-election and potentially president. Many people believe that a lot of his moves and his statements that are pushing back against pandemic restrictions and wanting to call a special session in order to overturn vaccination mandates in workplaces are really just designed to get him on the national platform and to further his political career. Is that why people in Florida elected him to be their governor? I mean, that is for the voters to decide, but, you know, Jacksport cannot handle the kind of freight that they get through Los Angeles, and Savannah is so nearby. They have deeper water. They're further along with their dredging. They have more infrastructure. They're working together with Charleston. There's so many reasons why Jacksport won't be the decision that these shipping companies make if they do try to reroute, but you know, I mean, I guess good job, Ron DeSantis, for getting the attention that he so desperately wants week in and week out.
To give fair voice to the governor's position, Raymond Troncoso, he says Florida's ports will offer incentives to offset the cost of rerouting ships. CEO Eric Green over at Jacksport says, and I'm quoting, "The success of this year's holiday season depends on shippers and ocean carriers diversifying their port calls and utilizing uncongested ports like ours." So the Jacksport leadership is saying, yes, we can play a role in solving this crisis.
I think it's important to emphasize that, again, it's a role, right? It's not the main thing. So a very good point is that, you know, Jacksonville probably can't handle the same levels that Savannah can, that LA can, but they can handle some additional business, and that's what they're trying to drive to Jacksport to. And even Jacksport wasn't the only port represented at that event earlier this week. Tampa was also there, Fort Lauderdale, and they're basically saying, hey, if you have ships, we already have some additional cargo from Europe that didn't want to deal with the congestion, they've moved through Jacksport. And so they're asking, if you have additional business, we're willing to give you incentives to move more business through our ports. I don't think it's going to save Christmas. I don't think it's going to be the end-all be-all of the congestion, but it could be helpful, and it could make some more money for the Jacksonville area.
With all of that said, before we let our esteemed panel go, it's time to round up some other stories that caught our eye this week. Yes, folks, time for the lightning round. Hopefully no lightning this weekend. I'll begin. The St. John's River Keeper wants you to go to their website and fill out a survey by 5 o'clock tonight. Let them know your thoughts about whether the Rodman Dam should be kept in place or whether it should be breached to allow a restoration of the Ocklawaha River. The St. John's River Water Management District is asking the public to give their feedback, and it's the first time in a long time they've done this. So go to stjohnsriverkeeper.org today and take the survey. Charles Griggs, what's on your mind?
Well, obviously, Melissa, we are watching what happens in Brunswick as jury selection continues for the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial. This is going to be a long process to select jurors and then get on with the trial. So it has been interesting to listen to some of the comments coming out of jury selection. And I would imagine that as we get deeper into this, the community of Brunswick is going to be continue to be in focus of the news, especially around the people who are selected to serve as jurors, because as we all know, that once the trial has concluded, we'll hear from them again as well.
That's right. We'll be following that trial closely. It does get back to our top story today, too, about the Black Lives Matter movement. Nate Monroe.
You stole mine, the Ocklawaha.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jags have a bye week, so we're at least spared some kind of pain. so that feels like something positive.
That's right. Claire, go forth. Instead of football this weekend, people can go take the walking tour of San Marcos Saturday, sponsored by the Jackson Mag. What are you going to be looking at? What's on your radar today and tomorrow? Let me put you back on the air. Go ahead, Claire.
.org. Oh, am I? I'm there. Okay, there.
Go ahead.
Good news for Friday. Sarah Park, a local 14-year-old ninth grader, she was named America's top young scientist after creating a device that uses artificial intelligence to gauge the body's response to music as a way to guide music therapy, which, you know, good job, Sarah. And if you want to read this story, head on over to news.wjct.org.
Thanks for that. And Raymond Troncoso.
I wish we could have ended on that happy note. mine would be the Woman of the Confederacy statue that's in Springfield. There's still debate going on. The city needs to approve a $1.2 million ordinance that's going to take 13 out of 18 votes from the council. It goes to committee next week for a second reading. There's probably going to be a lot of residents there angry talking about it on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it will come up for a final vote in November, which will definitely have a lot of heated discussion from the community.
We'll watch that. Thank you all so much. Raymond Troncoso of WJCT, Nate Monroe of the Times Union, regular contributors Charles Griggs, Claire Goforth. Guys, have a great weekend. See you soon.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, all. And in a moment, how you can dive into the Jacksonville music experience. It's our DJ listening sessions up next with arts and culture editor Matt Shaw spinning for us right here in the studio. Don't go away.
Next Fresh Air, music star Lenny Kravitz. His memoir, Let Love Rule, is about his life up to the release of his first album in 1989. He'll talk about his close relationship with his mother, actress Roxy Roker, the tough relationship he had with his father, meeting Lisa Bonet, and finding his musical voice. Join us.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
The White House rolls out a plan to vaccinate kids as young as 5. The nation mourns the loss of a trailblazing general, and after he called on Trump supporters to rise up, Congress tells Steve Bannon to show up.
There are consequences for outright defiance.
We'll get to all of it on this week's Friday News Roundup on 1A.
Today at 10, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, as temperatures cool around town, local artists are heating up, setting streaming services ablaze with some brand new music. Today, we're going to listen to three songs from some of the region's most buzzed about artists. Our arts and culture editor, Matt Shaw, is here with some DJ listening sessions, part of our Jacksonville music experience. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Excited to listen to some music with you.
Yeah. So what's up first?
I wanted to play first a song by an artist named DeAndre Letsum. He's a 26-year-old alto saxophone, wonderkind. He had a release party at Underbelly on Sunday for a new record called Impetus. And he plays on the record. He tackles Miles Davis tune Blue and Green from probably the best-selling jazz album of all time. So it shows you his confidence. And actually on that record, I don't know if you know who plays saxophone on Kind of Blue. Trivia for you?
No, but John. I know you'll know. I mean, I know Kind of Blue. I don't know who played on
John Coltrane played.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
that. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So Blue and Green, this is DeAndre Letsum. This is his take on that track.
Okay.
Thank you.
Beautiful, Matt.
Yeah, I have a feeling David Luckin, the station manager, was trying to jump through the radio and say, John Coltrane.
I know. I should. That's one of those things I should know or should have been able to just spout off right away.
On the spot.
Yeah. Okay. So that's DeAndre Letsome, Blue and Green. Let's talk about Phase Wave, Waiting to Lose.
Yeah, Phase Wave, a much buzzed about indie band from here in Jacksonville. They're playing on Saturday night at the Kona Skate Park Clubhouse. So if you're into a sweaty, dank indie rock show, Phase Wave's a band to check out. They've got a new song called Waiting to Lose, and their sound just keeps getting bigger and bigger, maybe headed towards arena rock at some point. So this is Waiting to Lose from Phase Wave.
Now, these guys, you think, are almost ready for arena shows, maybe, in a way.
Maybe, yeah. If you've been to any of their shows of late, I think, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I saw pictures of the last time they played at Kona. It was the first time in a while I've seen people that close together, that many people huddled in the same place together. So they've got a growing following, and they continue to release quality music, so...
Okay, last but not least, Lands in the Garden. Tell us about this.
Yeah, Lands is a duo, Brian Squillis and Raniah Woodard. They just signed a record deal with Run for Cover Records. They have a new song called In the Garden, and I've coined the term for them after listening to them nonstop for 5 years. I'm calling it electronic umami because it's electronic pop music, and it's kind of rooted in these samples of, you know, tree branches and bird songs and very earthy kind of tones in there. So In the Garden, I think, is a great representation of the direction they've been headed for a while. So let's listen to it.
That is umami for the ears, Matt.
Trademark. Electronic umami. I've got it.
Oh, yeah. You need to trademark that. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about the Jacksonville Music Experience and your role with JME. You can look at jacksmusic.org for so much more content. Now, the JME team is going to be at Intuition Ale Works tonight and tomorrow night for a couple of shows. What's happening?
So tonight, a band from Philadelphia, a power pop quartet called Sheer Mag. Really excited to have them in town. They're kind of an NPR Music and Pitchfork darling of the last few years. And so they're playing Intuition on Friday. And then Frankie and the Witchfingers, this LA psych rock band, is headlining on Saturday. Intuition is kind of getting their beer hall, which is a medium-sized live music venue. They're getting it up and running. And they've got a lot of good stuff on the calendar, all of which you can read about on jacksmusic.org.
What's it been like since we've launched jacksmusic.org, you know, bringing local artists into the spotlight, and what kind of feedback are you getting around town as people kind of have a new way to discover these bands and these artists?
Yeah, a lot of good feedback from the artists. I think they're very thankful. We've been, you know, working with our partners at NPR Music. They ask us for recommendations for their Now Playing blog. And so we've gotten a few artists up on that, and so they get sort of national attention outside of the Jack's Music Experience exposure that they get. And we're also covering a lot of new music to discover that's not local as well, to not only because we think it's great, but it also provides some context for what artists in our area are making right now and how it fits in these bigger narratives that are happening.
Check it out, everyone, at jacksmusic.org. Listen to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. You can stream on our HD channels, too. All of this local music. And come say hi to Matt Shaw, our arts and culture editor, and the entire JME team at Intuition Aleworks tonight and tomorrow night for two great shows. Sheer Mag and Frankie and the Witchfinger, stop by our table and say hi. He'll be there. Thanks, Matt.
I'll be there. Thank you, Melissa.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure to join us again today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program rounding up the biggest stories across the state. That's today at noon. We'll see you then. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great Friday and a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.